And we'll go to our interviewee now. We'll say a very good morning to Northern Territory Senator and the Indigenous Affairs Minister, the Honourable Nigel Scullion. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us here on Black Star this morning.
No worries. Good morning.
And you're on Thursday Island this morning, Minister?
I am indeed on beautiful Thursday Island. It's blowing its heart out. I'm glad I'm no longer a fisherman, but it is just such a beautiful part of the world.
I was going to ask you for a quick weather report there, but you've quite comfortably handled that yourself. You're up in this part of the world on tour with the Prime Minister. Senator, could I ask you firstly, could you just describe how you felt yesterday on your first day, and in particular travelling to visit Mare Island and to the village of Laas? Tell us, could you describe to us how you felt yesterday?
Well, I have to say that the village of Laas is something that will remain with me that morning forever. I think it was most appropriate. We actually began the trip with a ceremony at the graveside of Ledi Mabo. I mean, we all know across Australia, particularly in this area, his role in Native Title was really the genesis of the last stage of land rights, I suppose. And for me, it was a very moving ceremony. It was just a beautiful, quiet glade. I was there with Eddie and Gail and the Prime Minister at Eddie Mabo's grave. It was a very emotional ceremony. Just something that you were so pleased in your life to have been a part of. And Gail and the wider community of Laas were delighted to have the Prime Minister there, and I think just a reminder about such a significant role that one of their great leaders had played.
Could you tell us about your past 24 hours? What's it been like? You went out to Mare, and then you've been back on Thursday Island. You had meetings and a couple of reception there last night. What's it been like, and what have you found out? What's the light at the end of the tunnel so far? Have you had a chance to meet up with locals and talk to them?
Well, I'm here often. I was only here 3 weeks ago. But one of the most important things about my visit is that we get a lot of my colleagues come up and visit. We're going to have Minister of Social Services. We've got Mr. Morrison. We've got the Attorney General, the Assistant Treasurer, Minister for Health. We've got the Assistant Minister for Education, the Parliamentary Secretary. Warren Inch has been up here, obviously, Prime Minister and myself. Now, that gives, as these individuals move around the place, they're talking to people, they're talking to locals. And whilst that's useful for the locals, it's even more useful for me because my colleagues get a first-hand opportunity to see what the challenges are here and the wonderful opportunities here in the Strait. But last night we had an event at the Cultural Centre here on Thursday Island, and we had, as always, the fantastic dancers, the wonderful cultural evening, but it was a delightful evening. I've also met with the TSRA. Today I'll be meeting with some other councils, talking about many of the things I would normally talk about when I'm here, but again, bringing some of my colleagues along to highlight to them the particular special challenges that remoteness brings to every community, and what some of the community's ideas are in regard to resolving some of those challenges.
Senator, if we could be able to prioritise the three most important things that need attention in Indigenous communities, what would they be?
Well, they are easily for me. We've got to get children to school, and we've got to give them the very best education. They go together. One is probably easier, whilst it might sound more difficult. I mean, getting kids to school is about engaging further with parents. But the education system in remote Australia, you know, the NAPLAN test across the board, with the exception, I have to say, of some places in the Cape, are just indicating that those kids who are going to school are not doing as well as they should. So there's getting kids to school, there's getting people into work, and employment, it is a panacea for so many things. Those people who are disconnected from work are often reconnected with the wrong sort of things. And it is very important we look at, from the community perspective, about what they want for their community, not what we want for their community, or not what bright ideas I might have. So sitting down with the community and saying, what sort of things would you like to happen here that can't quite happen and the government might help with? What sort of opportunities would provide for, you know, more employment, those sort of things. For example, on there yesterday, I mean, they've had a freezer that's been, that used to allow a lot of fishermen to fish into that freezer. It hasn't been working for a long time, and it needs some replacement. And so they're talking to us about how government might assist in that regard. We've also got, if there's interruptions about getting kids to school, obviously when you're in around the islands, it's a lot more difficult. We've got to get on ferries and buses to ensure those logistics are providing the very best we can provide. Clearly, we need to work with the Queensland Government to ensure that those sort of issues are there. And so they'd be the two priorities. But I think the third priority is just how we go about it. You know, we need to sit down with community and listen carefully to what the community wants in their future. And it needs to be a reflection of what they want. And they're far more likely to be working with government to ensure that our shared vision for that particular community is achieved.
One of the things seems to stand out quite some time, and of course in particular your trip to Murray Island yesterday, is the issue of native title. And in particular, the important issue of native title is brought up in the Northern Australia White Paper. Senator, native title hasn't brought the benefits it hoped it would. Is it time to go back to the High Court?
Well, I don't think the High Court's going to manage to determine any particular benefit. I come from the Northern Territory, and I know it well. And we've got over 70% of the landmass of the Northern Territory belongs to Aboriginal people. So actually having land, the legislation prescribed a way for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to get access to land through exerting their native title. But it didn't come with it a set of economic benefits. No, you will have an economy, you will have resources. It only actually got your native title. And I think that the term land rich and dirt poor is just simply a statement of opportunity. And the legislation can never say, there's never going to be a piece of legislation that says you're going to do well out of your land. And I think what we haven't done well enough is whilst the land has been provided, we all as a community need to work hard to ensure that you can actually realise economic development, jobs and a future from that land, because just land ownership isn't going to provide the opportunities that everyone else takes for granted. And by and large, we're doing that now. We're talking to people about how they want to use their land. And there are some challenges with some land tenure. And if it's a communally held land tenure, it can be a very long process to get some collaboration with all of the owners. There is quite often some the disputation resolution process takes a very long time, and so people are a bit frustrated that the things they assumed would happen are taking a lot longer to happen. But I don't think you're really able to legislate to say that, look, you know, these are the changes we need to the Native Title Act. But that certainly won't be something that's been considered in the near future.
And in particular, the inalienable freehold title, which is land successfully claimed and granted under inalienable freehold title, it cannot be bought, acquired or mortgaged. Communal title is formally vested in Aboriginal land trusts comprised of Aboriginal people who hold the title for the benefit of all the traditional owners. From that description there, it's not really freehold title at all, and this inalienable gets in the way, and a large portion of land is under this title.
Well, I'm happy to report that that's not actually the case. I possibly thought that was the case.
Okay.
Until recently, there's in Broome, the land was granted under native title in Broome. It is now, because they wished to rationalise their estate, so there were areas outside of Broome that didn't have any funds to go and do something. They actually had the native title areas within the council area of Broome. So they've transferred those across to freehold. They've sold those freehold blocks, and they've used the money from the freehold blocks to invest in. But that was a community decision. But you can imagine getting everyone to agree to that. Mm. That is tough going. But so technically, and I was probably like yourself a month or so ago before that event, I would have thought the same way. So it is technically quite possible, but it's about will. It's about having the will to be able to as a community who owns that land, given that people have struggled for so long and so hard for it, they're very, very conservative, very, very cautious about how that happens. But I think as people can see and view the circumstances and say, well, yes, it worked well over there, that's how it worked, that's how we got there, then the process of looking at different ways under which they can utilise their land, I think will take time.
Yeah, so many deadlocks under the and the native title debate, you know, continues. So one way where traditional landholders can get equity and at the same time keep their country secure, you know, is to change the title to freehold, ordinary freehold, like your house is built on, and then excise all the sacred sites and any other land that traditional owners see fit to do so, and use a caveat to say that this country cannot be bought or sold until the end of time.
Yeah, well, that is a matter for those people who own the country, and certainly there are some areas that is and always will be Aboriginal land and has to be that way. But I am seeing some changes in Queensland, particularly the Dogit. Mm. 20 years ago, a Dogit was very much the same. It had the same nature and alien ability. But now people are now moving Dogits to freehold because this is where their houses are. That's where they live. And they want to be able to have the same equity in their own lives as other Australians do. For both the previous and the current Queensland government seems to be taking, I think, a very sensible approach in that regard.
Mm, and just sort of, you know, like there's opportunities, big opportunities for joint ventures and allocate certain amount of land or certain amount of territory there where traditional owners can go into joint ventures with the multinational, international companies or other businesses.
Well, look, for sure, I think when you're starting off on any venture, all ventures are fraught. You know, the vast majority of small businesses fail. Mm. And they fail because small businesses start. I mean, when you kick off in life, you think that's a good idea, or go and throw a saddle on the giraffe or whatever you're doing. But, invariably, the first couple of those fail. And so you do need, particularly if you're putting at risk any equity, you do need to know that you're going into a venture sound, and you need to be going into a venture with partners who are also sound. And that's some of the ways that government can help in terms of doing background checks on people and assisting through both the Indigenous Business Australia and the Indigenous Bank Corporation.
Senator, could you tell us a bit about, in terms of your current government's commitment to meeting with landholders? Do you have anything in the pipeline in terms of renegotiating or having a look at the particular Land Act? And in particular, if you could share with us some of the work that you're going on in particular in the Northern Territory.
Well, we have under the Council of Australian Government a committee that's set up to look at, as part of the North Australian White Paper and development, what are the sort of changes that we might make that would allow Aboriginal people to have a better use of the land? So what impediments are there in the legislative sense, not only native title, Aboriginal land rights, that dog, it's and those sort of things, but there's other red tape in the use of land that doesn't enable them to use the land in the same way. So we've actually got a committee looking at that, and I think the committee's doing some great work. They've yet to report, but I'm looking forward to that report. But it is important that I think the feedback I get from communities and individuals and families out on country is very different. It's different in Queensland, it's different in Western Queensland, it's different in the desert, it's different in Western Australia. But the common theme is that we need the flexibility to deal with those unique circumstances on the ground. And we need to be willing, as a federal government, state or territory government, or even local government, we need to be keen and earnest about working with local Aboriginal communities to ensure whatever legislative barriers, because there are many and often unnecessary, particularly when they're dealing with the land owner, we need to work with them to ensure that they are no longer barriers. And I've said that's what my COAG committee is doing, and I'm looking forward to receiving their report later this year.
Oh, we'll look forward to having a chat with you when that report comes through and made available to the public as well.
Indeed. Well, that will probably happen, as I said, later in the year. I'm more than happy to have a chat about that.
Awesome. Senator, look, you've slept in the tent up there last night. Tell us a bit about your first couple of nights sleeping up there on TI. I mean, it's under the stars up there. I mean, it would have been quite a different arrangement to Arnhem Land, or quite similar?
Well, I'm probably not like a lot of parliamentarians.
Yes,
where I come from, I spend a lot of time in a swag on the sides of roads and different things, so I'm quite familiar with this sort of arrangement. And I frankly prefer it. But I think it is terrific to have all of my colleagues being able to see the capacity for them to come out here and still run the government. They've still got to run portfolios, they've still got to run the government, they've still got to have all these sort of meetings. And to do it up out here, I think, gives them an opportunity to understand how difficult it is. You know, they're saying, you go to some places, oh, my mobile phone hasn't got coverage. Well, welcome to our world, mate. And I think actually being here and living here is just a real advantage for each of the ministers. And life experience is teaching everything. And to actually have been here, talk to the people, understand their challenges firsthand, you can't champion a cause you don't understand. And I'd like all my cabinet colleagues to have the same approach as I do, and that is I'm a champion for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia. That's my job, beginning and end. And I spend my life doing that. But it is really important that they have an opportunity to understand not only why I'm so passionate about this, but also to understand all of the little details of the challenges that people face. I mean, this is a very exciting space, it's tremendous to see the look on their faces, just how delighted they are to visit remote places and to experience culture that they might otherwise not have done.
You're heading over to the Northern Peninsula area today and spending a few days in Bamaga.
I am indeed, yeah.
What are you looking forward to most heading over the NPA there? Have you got anything you can share with us about your trip over the Northern Peninsula area?
Well, again, we're meeting with a lot of the local authorities who can then speak firsthand about particular issues, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's the Treasury, whether it's education issues, whether it's general issues for me, or whether they want to speak to the Prime Minister. Everybody in the NPA and their representative body is going to get a fair bit of access over the next couple of days, and I don't have anything sort of laid out apart from the fact we're here to listen, and we're here to discuss what people think are some of the solutions to some of the challenges. We're also here to see just how fantastically it is going. Mm-hmm. So it's not only about bringing up the challenges. It was delightful to get out some 100% attendance certificates yesterday, and to see schools with above NAPLAN tests right across Main Street. This is not only about the challenges in the remote communities, it's also about celebrating their successes, which have been quite a remarkable number.
I was up there last week and had a visit there and met up with head of school campus there, Yolanda Coots, and had a yarn with a couple of the school captains there, and they've been really proud of the fact that they've got a 80% rate at the moment, but their target is 95%, and they're using their local radio station to promote that message there too.
Well, it is the great message. It's the message of freedom. If you want freedom in life, you need to have an education to know what those choices are and know what your rights are. And so there's just no reason not to be at school. I know it's something that becomes a habit after a while, but we all need to assist and the best people to get people to full school, as with all things, as our family, it's our extended family. And if kids aren't going to school, we need to work with them to find out why and to get them back to school. And sometimes going back to school is tough because we've been away for a while, a bit of shame, all of those sort of things. We need to make sure we've got a few friends at school, and we need to make sure that the environment and all the settings are right for you to not only return but to remain at school. And it's everybody's challenge. It's a whole community challenge, and we just need to ensure everybody gets an education so they can make the same choices and get the same opportunities as everyone else.
Senator, before I do let you go, I must ask you, you're heading over to the Northern Peninsula area. Are you going to get a chance to have a crayfish pie from Bernie's Kai Kai there in Bamaga?
Well, mate, the first thing we're going to head for is one of Bernie's crayfish pies. Someone was down there was watching the footy the other day, and they came back and they said they were selling crayfish pies, and I was saying, well, I was very cranky I wasn't there, but I've got an opportunity to make up for that, so I'll certainly be heading down there. It's one of the first things on my agenda.
Well, they've got the radio on in the shop at the morning, so send a shout-out there to Bernie and Keith. The minister is on his way, and he might bring a few of his colleagues along too to try it out, eh?
I certainly will.
Senator Nigel Scullion, look, thank you very much for coming on and talking to Black Star. Really appreciate that. And look, all the best for the rest of the week. And look, we look forward to having a chat with you next time here on Black Star.
All right, look, I'm just a delight to talk to you, and a very good morning to all your listeners, and a big SO from PI.